Now stay tuned for To Your Health, where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining in the downtown mall. And by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. Now here is your host, MC Blair.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning to you. It's Saturday morning.
Well, this is MC Blair, and I am with Angelique. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, Angelique. What's your last name, Angelique?
Jenkins.
Jenkins. And Charles.
Jenkins, yes.
Jenkins, all right. And then Angelique's Soul Food, right?
Yep.
Is that it?
Correct.
Yeah. And you're going to be an anchor member of the dairy.
The dairy market.
The dairy market off Preston being built, opening in
spring of
2020.
Correct.
And you'll have a restaurant in there.
Yes, we're very excited. We're going to have a restaurant featuring soul food and traditional foods.
Right.
Our main thing is soul food.
Okay.
So we're very excited.
Well, that's really cool. And you have a food truck as well.
Yes.
And Charles, you do that one pretty much, right?
Yeah, pretty much though. Yeah.
Pretty much on the food truck. I got you. I understand that. And, well, what got you into this? To food service.
Okay, so the story is, so my husband and I, you know, my husband approached me one day, and he told me to find a hobby. A hobby besides shopping, because I used to shop a lot. Whether it was for myself, him, or grandbabies, I just shopped a lot. He said, what would you like to do? I said, I like shopping. It makes me happy. He said, it has to be something else. I said, well, I love...
Find a new hobby.
Yeah, you can't make any money shopping, right?
I said, start bringing money in instead of putting it out, you know?
So I told him, I said, I love when people come to the house and I cook food for everyone when it's mm-hmm. a large crowd and they give me compliments and it just makes me want to cook more and more. So I said, I've always wanted to work a festival. When I was a little girl with my mom, I used to go to Washington mm-hmm. Park and mm-hmm. To the African Festival. And I just thought it was amazing to see people set up in tents selling fried fish and all that good old food outside like that. And so my husband said, make it happen. I said, how can we make that happen? I said, first of all, I'm the HR director for Doubletree. I don't have time mm-hmm. to make it happen. And I said, I don't have any equipment. Right. I don't know the first thing about doing this. He said, we can rent equipment. We can just make it happen. Google, find a person that's in charge of the African Festival, make it happen. Applied for the festival. Got in, did our first festival at Washington Park, and had a quick rush from it. It was amazing.
Yeah,
she was hooked.
I told my husband, I want to do another one.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We ended up having food left over, you know, because you have to buy so much stuff for these festivals, and we had some food left over. And so we decided to invite some family members to buy some plates from us, like some fried fish, and I ended up making some macaroni and cheese and green beans. Mm. And I told my husband, oh my gosh, I made like $600 just selling plates to the family members and close friends. So after that, I decided to do it the legal way. So I went to the health department and got my catering license and ended up written a commissary. And we end up booking how many festivals, Charles, the next year? About 20?
First, we did several of them.
Like 2 or 3 the next year.
Yeah.
And then after that, we did like 20 festivals.
I'll bet.
I said, Charles, this is the list. He said, oh my goodness, what? So anyway, we started doing the festivals. We ended up buying a dry trailer just to keep our commercial tent inside. We ended up purchasing our own fryers, mm-hmm. Freezers, all of our equipment we needed to travel.
Okay.
And then, you know, we continued to do festivals, reaching out to Richmond, Virginia, Virginia Beach, just everywhere, just traveling, doing festivals during the summertime. And last year, we came to an end of the summer festivals, and I said, oh my gosh, the festival season is over. We can't do any more tent setups. What are we going to do? It's cold. I want to keep it going. And we looked at each other. My husband said, we can buy a food truck.
Right.
So we end up going to Richmond, looking at food trucks, and ran to a few places we could purchase one from. And on our way from Richmond, we got a phone call from a close friend, said, I know someone that's selling a food truck. They used to have a food truck.
Right here in town.
You're going all over the state.
Everywhere. So we end up purchasing that particular food truck from him, and we end up renovating, getting some of his equipment taken out because he did other foods other than what we were planning on doing.
Right.
So we got that renovated, put some of our own equipment in there, and you know, and we've been going full blown ever since. And now it's just overwhelming. We just have so much going on, and you know, we're primary on Pantops Mountain, where we're parked at. We're open on Thursdays and Fridays on Pantops for lunch. Other than that, we're pulling around different places.
The same place where Giant is?
Not that far up, right across the highway from CVS, near the Cosmos.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, at the end of at the bottom of Pantops. We're right across the road from CVS. That's the AutoZone.
Sure.
Yeah, there's what's the other restaurants behind us? Fabio's? Is it Fabio's?
Oh, yeah, Fabio's.
Fabio's restaurant. Okay. Right across from Costner's.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. So we've been, my husband's there, actually, on Thursdays and
Primarily,
Fridays.
Yes. Okay.
For lunch.
Yeah, I bet.
He's the one opening the food truck. And because, of course, I'm at the Doubletree. I still work at the Doubletree. I've been there for 19 years as HR director.
Yeah.
So. We're trying to, and he has his full-time job also.
I work overnight.
He works overnight.
Okay, all right.
So we've been balancing, both of us have been balancing working our full-time jobs and trying to get the business, up and going and running. And, there's been lots of opportunities for us. And, things are, we never expected it to be a hobby at first. It was a hobby. We didn't expect for it to be, as far... We didn't expect to be as far into this as we are right now.
I thought it was just going to stay a hobby for her, to keep her busy from going to the malls and running the Richmond Mall and going to. She primarily lived to go to a mall.
I was going to say.
No matter where we go, we're in Texas, where's the mall? California,
that's
the mall?
Hilarious. Yeah.
So we're still shopping. We're just shopping for for chicken and collard greens and equipment.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I still get my shopping in there
just a little bit. From disposable plates now.
I'm like, this is some nice disposable places. Look like real China.
Yeah,
catering gigs.
Oh, that's crazy. So you now you can shop and like you were mentioning, there's a place in town where you can pick up local produce.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we normally go to a lot of the farmers markets downtown and pick up local produce. We do it for the food truck right now. We do a lot of stuff. We use Sysco, but then we do like our salads and stuff like that. And we use the local produce for that.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're going to talk about the dairy also.
Right. And the restaurant. And the restaurant definitely going to be using more.
Locals.
Well,
oh, yeah.
I know they're actually
promoting,
advertising that there will be a lot of local ingredients being used.
Yes.
Within the food vendors that are at the dairy market,
that's
so important.
It's important to support the community.
It's community-based agriculture is all what it's all about.
Yes,
and I know I always wanted to have a garden, a little home.
My husband
garden.
Too. He talks about that all the time.
Oh really?
Yeah.
I got a first try.
It's not too hard. If you're just growing for yourself, you can get a couple. Actually, they have these raised bed type things that you can do. And for yourself, and there's also a Babylon Hanging Farms. It's hydroponic, and they are they're in some of the restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I believe Rapture and Boar's Head are using them as well as some others. And they're growing all their own produce right there on site, and so that's.
I like to look into that.
That's awesome. And they make them in all. They make them for homes, and they make them for institutional mm-hmm. venues as well.
Right.
And so that's another way to stay local.
Yes.
Quite frankly, I prefer soil. growing in soil in the right way, and there's of course they have the. The absolute right way is drought proof because you've got animals going over the pasture and they're fertilizing
and you've got constantly
the egg layers egg layers coming behind the cows and scratching through the cow pies and eating all the fly larvae for the protein and then and the greens and the grass and all that sort of thing, so it's a big cycle. It's really exciting to see. And I went to a farm in Shenandoah Valley, that is, at the time I went there, they were at probably the 15-year mark of a 20-year drought.
Oh wow!
And fields on both sides were dry and brown and just unproductive. His grass was like above my knees, The ground was spongy, and he hadn't watered or fertilized since 1960.
Wow. Oh, wow.
So his farm, because of the proper soil management, is drought-proof. It acts as a wick, as a well. The whole farm was a well.
Wow.
You know, and it doesn't freeze in the winter because of all the microbes in there, all I call it squirmy soil. So that's like the ultimate goal, you know. And we can do that. We can do that right here in Charlottesville on a big scale if enough people buy into it and help work it and all that sort of thing. So, but you're excited about getting into the dairy market, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I bet you are, with your restaurant and all that, and you will be using the local, which is really good. But so tell us about, I guess the food. I mean, you know,
some of the food that we'll be serving in the dairy.
Yeah.
So some of the food we'll be doing, like the barbecue chicken leg quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're going to use the food hub and go check
them out.
See,
I told him about that earlier, about the local food hub.
There you go.
Yeah, it uses the local farms and all that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We have a tremendous fiesta salad. I use it for catering right now. Lots of vegetarian, lots of, like, the fresh corn. I like to boil that and use the fresh corn versus using canned corn. So the fiesta salad, we're going to have that inside the dairy. And we're going to have the collard greens, the fresh collard greens. We don't do canned collard greens, the fresh collard greens. Green beans also. We're going to do the street corn, the corn to cob, you know, the seasoned corn. We're also going to do the yams.
You know, it's funny that, you know, in my research, I found that yams are pretty much restricted to Africa.
Uh-huh.
They're huge.
Yeah.
It takes two people to carry one.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
They are huge, aren't
they? Oh, my God. They're like 8 feet long and 4 feet in diameter. They're giant.
Wow.
And but the Morning Glory plant, which actually is in the Morning Glory family, is the sweet potato, which is American. And that's what we get. Now, I read it. I don't know if it's true or not, but according to this article I read, the word yam obviously was brought over from Africa way back under unfortunate circumstances. Heinous, not unfortunate. That's a terrible, heinous. Just anyway, won't go into that, folks.
That's not going to that.
No, that's not going to that one. But it was brought over, and when they saw the sweet potato, they said, oh, it's like a little yam.
Yeah, you know, like a
little mini yam. You know?
Okay.
It was a totally different plant. It just resembled.
Yeah.
And so they started using yams, and the people that put it on the cans and labels and stuff, they liked it because it was only four letters.
Yeah.
Instead of sweet potato.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And when
there's a difference,
when
though.
You're printing a label, you're paying for the words.
Right.
You're paying for each letter, you know? And so they obviously they prefer. So they call them, and so that just came, everything's yam.
Everything's yam.
And you'll see sweet potato here and there, but most of the time it's yam, and it's not a yam. It's a sweet potato.
No, that's a difference, because we get the locally grown, for home. You know,
right.
I buy the local yams. You can get them. I think they have them at Kroger also. We get them, and they look totally different from the sweet potato. They're not as thick, not as fat. They're slender. They're more orange. They're you can tell the difference. There's a big difference. So
But
we're gonna have the barbecue leg chicken quarters, my husband's favorite.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I have to keep him away from those when I cook those. I'm like, these are for the customers, Charles. Can I eat all the barbecue chicken leg quarters? We're
so
gonna
good.
Do the homemade macaroni salad, potato salad, of course my homemade baked macaroni and cheese.
Oh, I saw. On your website, it was all kinds of names of people, Arthur, so and so,
Celeste,
so and so, and all that.
So,
you know,
that was so cute. So when I first started the website and I started to put down some items for the menu, I used family members. So our oldest grandson Nathan, he loves the chicken salad. Chicken salad sliders.
Yeah.
So then we did Carter. We did Carter. What did I put that for Carter? I think Carter's meatballs.
Mm-hmm.
And then Naomi's fruit bowl. Then we did Papa's sampler. That's Papa's a little bit of everything. That's my husband. Yeah. That's Charles.
Oh, okay. Okay, I got you. All right.
Yeah,
all right.
Like Angelique's fish chips.
Sure, so, I saw that. I saw
it
that.
Was so cute because a client had called me up and she was telling me some items she wanted to order for a catering gig. She said, I'll take some Nathan Sliders, some Carter's meatballs. I said, that's so cute. I love it.
Was there a Naomi in there?
I think she was the last one that was on. She's my 2-year-old granddaughter, so I added her last year. So I had to add her in there. God. Like Bear's Kebabs. That's my youngest.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that. Yeah. Bear's Kebabs.
Yeah, Bear's Kebabs. Yeah. So.
I was like, I need to meet Bear.
Yeah. You know?
Well,
tall and slim.
Yeah.
So we're going to incorporate a lot of that into the dairy market.
So it's kind of a family affair.
It's definitely a family affair. Well, we've got lots of family working for us. Of course, it's my husband and I, we're a team. So it's definitely family. Close friends also.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to hire some other, you know, individuals, hopefully get people some part-time jobs out here.
Well, you know, that's it. It's community and family.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
And I know that when people eat at your place, they'll pick up on it. They might not know what they're picking up on,
right.
But they'll just pick up on that spirit.
That feeling. Yeah, absolutely. That
feeling. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And then, of course, you know, when you're working there, there's going to be times where things get a little stressed and
family.
All that sort of
it's
thing.
Family.
But it's family. Exactly.
Yeah, that's what we do. We get all stressed out.
Yeah, yeah.
We first started doing the festivals under the tent.
Mm-hmm.
We used to all argue under the tent, all family working.
Oh,
at the end
goodness.
Of the day, we was giving each other hugs and kisses. Good job to everybody.
Guess but who was the most struggle. Stressed out?
That's
just
sounds
want things
great.
To be perfect. But with the dairy, what did we come up with for the dairy? For Good Angelique's part. Kitchen, mm-hmm. short for Angelique Kitchen.
AKs.
So we're going to make it shorten it down a little bit, rebrand a little bit. You know, Angelique's Kitchen AKs. So in the dairy, part of the historic structure, part of the brick wall is still inside our food stall.
Oh,
so we're
going
to get like AKs really big. So people come to AKs where food becomes your happiness.
Yes,
so that's
the slogan.
Yeah, where food becomes
your happiness.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
And we got that from when we go to restaurants.
Yeah.
I ordered my entree. He would order his entree and he'll let me taste mine first to see if I like it.
Mm-hmm.
If I like it, I do the happy
she
dance.
She do the happy dance.
If I don't like it, we switch plates, aren't we?
No, she takes my plate. She tries to take my plate.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Try, right.
Can I share his plate with him?
Always in my plate.
Oh, my God.
I should order what you got, Charles.
Well, it's funny because I, you know, when I think the family affair, of course, I was Sly and the Family Stone, and they did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
There it was.
Yeah.
They had cousins and uncles and aunts and brothers and sisters, and the stage was full of people. And of course, in that music, that was some good music too. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And you have some good food, no doubt.
Yes, it makes you happy
with the family. Yeah,
yes.
It really does.
Yes, it makes a big difference.
And that's I've interviewed folks with their home gardens, and one friend of mine, Alphonse DuPont, Richard Collins is his real name, but anyway, so he'll get up there and he'll go out in his garden and just sit. Take a chair out there and just sit in the garden and relax, and it just takes away all the stress.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I find
nature.
that is throughout.
Yeah.
You know, everybody that has that home garden would just relax, completely relax. And I know with the kitchen, when I owned a catering kitchen, I would actually go in there and just sit in the kitchen and just relax and look around and just go,
Yeah.
You know, like after an event that went well.
But I tell you, that's my feeling. That's the happiness. Yeah.
Yeah.
To my happy place.
Oh, I know. It's true.
It does.
Gosh, thanks, guys. And you're going to be at the dairy market. It opens in the spring. Just keep an eye out for that. Website?
Yes, angeliqueskitchen.com.
Okay, angeliqueskitchen.com.
Mm-hmm.
And is there anything else you want to just throw in there?
No, thanks for having us on the radio show today.
Yeah,
if anybody's
my
interested
pleasure.
In catering, they can contact us. We are booking for the holiday season.
Yeah, go to the website, book for the holiday season, and good food, comfort food. I think we were talking on the phone.
That's
Mom's
right.
Kitchen.
Mom's kitchen. That's right.
That's
Grandma's kitchen is Mom's kitchen. Come over to Mom's and have some food, some good old food.
Well, thanks so much for coming in. Really,
thank you.
Really enjoyed
thanks
this.
Thanks for having us.
I know I can't wait for coming on over there to the dairy market. And seeing you guys.
Wonderful.
And I am back. That's right. Boy, that was really nice, Angelique. and Charles Jenkins, and they're going to be at the Dairy Market in the spring. And now I went to Caremont Farm. We're in for a treat. I went to Caremont Farm and I interviewed Gail Hobbs Page down there. She and her husband Daniel are doing some wonderful, wonderful things, raising their goats and making goat cheese. And you'll hear, Gail is quite the activist and quite knowledgeable in why local food is so important. And you will get that in this interview. So without further ado, we are going to play it. MC Blair here. I am at Caremont Farm, and we're going to be interviewing Gail Hobbs Page shortly. I'm waiting now. She's in the middle of feeding animals. I'm on a wraparound deck looking out over the farm. Absolutely gorgeous. If you ever get a chance to get out of town and get to a farm, do so. It's wonderful, calming, stress-free environment. I guess the farmers go through a little stress, but I don't. It's not my farm. Well, here comes Gail now. Hey, Gail, how are you?
I'm doing great. This is a fine day here in Virginia.
It is. Speaking with Gail Hobbs Page of Caremont Farm. And we are sitting on this beautiful deck. Sun, gorgeous, not a cloud in the sky. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful day. And a stress-free environment.
Well, this time of year, it's pretty stressless for me, too.
Yeah, yeah.
The season is coming to an end with long nights and short days just down the corner, around the corner. This is a good time of year for us.
And it's the only time I could get out here for the interview, because other than that, if I wanted to interview her during the heavy season, I'd be following her around while she did chores. Yeah, no doubt.
Yes, yes.
So what do you do here at Caremont?
Well, we've been making fine farmstead cheeses, I'm happy to say, since 2007. Mm-hmm. Started out with a herd of only about 13 goats, and now we're up to about 125. And we're just here in Southern Albemarle County producing cheeses for our community, and have been doing that for a very long time. Yeah, that's what we do. We just lead a very seasonal life, and been doing that since 2007.
So it's going well for you.
Well, it's not without its challenges.
Yeah, I understand.
Climate change comes to mind. Seasonality comes to mind. But yeah, we have been able to make a go of this by never taking ourselves real seriously. And also letting the animals really drive the kinds of cheeses we make, and also realizing that our farm is something special, and that we open up our farm and share it with others, because the best way to see what we do is to come here and see us do it. And so we have developed a very healthy, popular agritourism program that we're proud to say is in its fifth year.
Agritourism, so that means you have people visiting and...
Not a new concept.
Mm-hmm.
People come to the farm. People enjoy the farm. People see what we do. They leave their cell phones home, hopefully, and they just come and relax and be in a rural environment that encourages mindfulness and good food, and it's really just a nice way to spend the day.
Hmm. Oh my gosh! Now you do dinners, don't you?
Well, we do a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
We realized probably 5 years ago that just making cheese really wasn't sustainable for the amount of employees that we wanted to have here. And so with my food background, sort of gives me a little bit of a boost in that realm. So we started doing dinners. Quite frankly, they now have shifted over more to events that happen during the day. Although with that said, we do have some plans this spring for a series of pop-ups with local chefs that come to the farm and do their thing. But yeah, we started doing farm dinners, which were very popular. Now we we do more food festival types. When we were in Europe last year, we went to a bean festival, a truffle festival, a fried fish festival. Mm. And I said to my husband, I was like, we should kind of do that here. Also, it's very dark here. And we don't have street lights and we don't have sidewalks.
Right.
And so getting people home safely was very important to us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's the structure of the things we do now, is we mostly open up the farm and we have people come out and make good food for everyone here.
Well, that's great. I first met Gail. She was chefing at a friend's restaurant down in Norfolk, Virginia. And then they moved up here. She and her husband, Daniel, moved up here and actually took up residence at Hamilton's at first in Maine to start with.
For over 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and then you got the farm and started making cheese.
Well, I cooked at Hamilton's for 7 years and then went out to Nelson County, found a wonderful restaurant community out there where I attempted to do, actually had a garden, think of it, and we ate. We cooked dishes from the garden.
That was at the B&B, right?
Yeah, the Marquette. It was mm-hmm. a fantastic food experience for me. That was when I was kind of transitioning over to the idea that I wanted a life on the farm. And I still wanted a life in food. Laura Mendoza of Lampo fame was, in Prime 109 fame, was my first sous chef. And I think he was a teenager.
Yes, he was. I remember
but
that.
But the boy could cook even when he was a teenager.
And I was sharing a house with he and his dad.
For local chefs in the community. So, yeah, this story has been around for a long time, but I cooked out there and then got an opportunity to do a dairy project at Best of What's Around, which is Maple Hill Farm. And that was very a brief stint. And then the dairy thing, the cheese making thing, really got into my bones, and I just decided I really wanted to do it. So that was when we moved the project here. That was in 2006.
Right.
2007 was my first permitted year of selling, and I was the new gal on the block. And there was Pat Elliott over in Rappahannock.
Yes,
Verona, who really forged a lot of territory.
She did.
Grayson, Meta Creek Dairy up in Galax.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, there were very few cheesemakers in the South. But now I'm happy to say that, we have a pretty good thing. We've got, got at least three projects going on here, and the cheeses are all wonderful. And some of them came through here, and I think since that time, we've seen a lot more cheesemakers come up.
Yeah, now I know you're available, your cheeses are available at the City Market in town, mm-hmm. as well as the Nelson Farmers Market. Are you involved in any other farmers markets?
No. In the past, we did D.C. I mean, distribution, oh my God, open that can of worms. But we made a decision in 2013 was when we entered a cheese in a contest, and it placed second in the category, and everybody wanted the cheeses, and we were shipping all over the place, and we were selling to grocery stores. And then it just we made a decision that we really had to figure out what kind of distribution we could successfully achieve. And so that meant two farmers markets. Nelson County, the people, that's an awesome market.
It is an awesome market.
And City Market in mm-hmm. Charlottesville, mm-hmm. which is a different kind of market, but no less awesome. And we sell to two local distributors who carry our things, Local Food Hub and Cavalier Produce,
mm-hmm.
Who I can't say enough about Amy Worrell. We wouldn't be Caramont without the good folks at Cavalier. They really stood by us.
Yeah, I know. When I was catering, most of my institutional stuff came from Cavalier. They were very accommodating.
And a lot of times people don't really understand that relationship between a wholesaler and a farmer is something that really might you know, make or break you.
Absolutely.
I mean, just keep you in business. So we try to sell locally, direct, and give the people that come to the farmers market a little heads up on some of our artisan release or our small release cheeses. And then, you know, we let Amy and Food Hub sell, you know, put it on the truck and let them take it up too. So our distribution is, you know, hopefully now is smarter, not harder. Where and more sustainable, because you know, you really need to think about that when every time you hop into the car these days.
At the city markets, you're dealing directly with the customers, mm-hmm. the people, and so you don't lose that connection. And then with the local food hub, they deal with institutions. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. yeah, that you got it covered. That's really neat.
Well, you know, in the beginning, mm-hmm. you do what you have to do to
right.
get your brand out there and to get that, you know, get that one wheel of cheese 3.5 hours away. But, you know, we've done that, and hopefully this scenario is working and allows the people that really want our cheeses to get them. I love the farmers market because I love seeing my customers. I love being a part of the community. I never tire of a kid having, you know, goat cheese for the first time and liking it, and his parents looking at him and going, oh my God, he likes it.
Yeah. Hey, you're listening to Your Health right here at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And we are playing the Gail Hobbs Page interview of just a couple of days ago. And right here at WPVC 94.7.
You know, I never tire of that. I never tire of little old ladies from Croatia coming and saying it tastes like the cheese they had, you know, in their country. And you won't get that if you just sell to a distributor.
True.
So the farmers market is just as much, and the events we do, they're just as much for me as it is for there's that relationship that local food has to have.
Yeah, it's all about community. You know,
it's more than just a piece of cheese.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, or a piece of meat or a vegetable.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you were telling me earlier that some of the people right here around where you are in Esmont, you guys are talking about kind of getting your own little food justice going on with everybody chipping in the community and growing for
the community. Well, I think we were talking about health benefits of raising your own food.
Yes.
And I love, you know, trading with my fellow farmers at the farmers market, but, you know, let's face it, you know, 2016 was kind of a tough year for some of us, and I started gardening and raising food and canning food and preserving food as a way to sort of deal with what was going on with current events in America. And we have the land here. What started as just, you know, like a few herbs has turned into 3 raised beds. And now we're putting up a high tunnel so that we can raise more food and just so that we can sustain. Our employees love it. You know, we share with our employees our vegetables. We raise an animal for them, you know, pig, so that they can just have goats. You know, they can have an added perk of working on a farm. And now our neighbors are starting, my neighbors over at Mount Alto Sungrown are going to be helping us. So, yeah, I mean, what really started out is like a way for me to sort of like meditate out and get away from, you know, what was going on in the world. Let's face it, you know, I'm not ashamed to say it.
Right.
It has turned into something that is, you know, for lack of a better pun, growing.
So, Gail, let's talk about your business and the customers that you deal with. You kind of cultivate them, right? As almost like a garden?
Exactly. I mean, it's an analogy that I have used with my employees and in meetings many times. And, you know, it's one thing to get an account, and it's another thing to keep it. When you are figuring out who you want to sell to, how you want to sell, do you want to do all retail? You have to really have that relationship with your customer, which is easy at the farmers market. In, you know, there's a certain amount of greenwashing or local washing that goes on, and I've always taken a lot of pride in my customers, because a lot of times they will spot it and text me or email me and say, hey, look, I know that's not your cheese. It says it is, but it's not, because I know how your cheese tastes.
Mm.
And so that is one of the challenges of being in local food and watching the local food movement become very popular and almost like a marketing tool. And, you know, where you go and somebody, especially some of the larger concepts, some of the larger local food concept, you know, restaurants, and they'll buy it once or twice, or they'll buy, you know, 10 pounds of something, and then 2 years later you're on the menu. And you're like, wow, that 10 pounds lasted a long time. You know, farmers, we're a humble bunch, and so you don't want to rock the boat, and you don't want to cause a confrontation, excuse me, and so you kind of shy away from that. But it's a tough decision but what's really important is that you identify it early, if young farmers out there, young cheesemakers, and that you realize that, like, that's not cool.
No.
That's not support. And a lot of times what they will say is, well, I thought you needed the, you know, it's a win-win for you, because, you know, people are think you're on the menu. I was like, but I'm not on the menu, so what part of this is good for me?
Exactly. So they buy a little bit today, and then a year from now, mm-hmm. it still says, we feature Caramont cheeses. And there's no Caramont cheeses.
And we are back. We are listening to the interview that I interviewed Gail Hobbs Page of Caramont Farm. And we're right in the middle of it. We were just talking about greenwashing. And, of course, greenwashing is where a restaurant will buy a few pounds or a small amount of food from a local farm, list it on the menu, and then stop buying it from that farm and buy it from institutional sources, and still advertise that they are, in fact, supporting the local farms, when in fact they're not. So that's what we just finished talking about. So we'll get right back to it right here at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
Yeah. It's a very tough call, and because essentially what they're doing is, you know, they're riding piggyback on
right.
your market,
trading on your mm-hmm. on your name, mm-hmm. and not being a customer.
And you know, particularly as a female farmer, we're inclined to be accommodating and maybe a little more reticent to have a confrontation, but. I would encourage people doing this. That those are the very things that that set you back mm-hmm. down the road. And it's better to just get it out on the table in an unemotional way. Hey, I don't want you to do that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're listening to Your Health on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice, the voice of resistance. Right here in Charlottesville, and we are talking to Gail Hobbs Page of Caramont Farm. I'm MC Blair, and it's a beautiful day, Gail. Gorgeous.
Yeah, it doesn't get any better than this. I'm a little worried. We haven't had here we are in November, and the mulberry tree still has its leaves.
Gail, I want to thank you, by the way. Folks, Gail is the one who turned me on to real food back in like 2002, I think. And she gave me a warning. She said, before I tell you this, you have to know that if you do this, you cannot go back. That your body will reject the factory farmed food. And she was right. But I just wanted to thank you, Gail.
Oh, that's so sweet. I have no recollection of that, but it sounds like something I would say.
Yeah, it absolutely and started me on the right road. That's absolutely for sure. So
it's really kind of an old-timey concept. I mean, if you grow up with good food and, you know, you sort of get used to it, the idea that something is that you cook is really flavorful. And I think one of the things that led me to the style of food that I enjoy is that it just tasted good.
Mm-hmm.
And like if you, it seems like, you know, if you go to a chain restaurant or fast food, it just, it's kind of the idea of what it's supposed to taste like, and it always disappoints. So I guess that's kind of the warning that I was giving you.
Yeah, and you know, in the United States, for a long time, up until, well, probably World War II, I think, possibly a little after that, maybe late 50s, the whole country was a farming community, you know, and then it changed.
The way our food was grown and distributed, I think it had a lot to do with interstates and fossil fuel.
I do, yep, absolutely.
And, you know, women back into the workforce where, you know, there wasn't the traditional model anymore, and it was all about convenience, and it gave, you know, larger food systems an opportunity to capitalize on that demographic. I mean, I think this stuff started a long time ago. I always enjoy Eric Schlosser's book, Fast Food Nation.
That was
an eye opener for me on many levels. Not just on the way our food is grown, but also the labor systems that it supports. And that book came out a long time ago. And you know, even as we sit here right now, Mike, there are things in operating to ensure that bigger, better, faster, cheaper model of food is alive and well and supported by the people who are leaders. It is not a coincidence that we have the systems that we have. It's a very deliberate system.
It is, and
it all works together, and it dovetails together very nicely. You know, Big Pharma loves it.
Well, they do, because the factory food system keeps us sick, and then Big Pharma sells us pills.
We had a cheese making class here last Sunday, and a couple of the people here were they were scientists, and they had just gotten back from a trip to out west to an organic, grass fed 5,000 head cattle operation. And I was like, well, you know, how was it? Why are we talking about this? And he said, there was no grass. He said it was a feedlot operation, and they fed them organic grass pellets. So, but yet, and they could still market this meat as organic grass-fed meat. So here you go, people. This is what we're talking about. These systems are essentially still the same old thing. It's just a new spin. And that is big ag at its very worst, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely.
And so now, so he was there to analyze some kind of water system. So now these feedlots, these grass-fed feedlots with no grass, I might add, 5,000 head. The first thing that comes to me is groundwater.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you... You know, there's a horrifying recall almost every single week in the United States of America, and it's listeria or salmonella, and it's on lettuce, or it's on cantaloupes, or it's in frozen vegetables. So, you know, where 25 years ago, you know, it was a recall, and we could cook it away, or we could wash it away. Hey, guess what? You can't do that anymore. It's in your food. It's in it. It's not on it. It was a really good conversation that we had, because these are the things that, you know, fast forward, you know, 25 years, and these are the problems that Big Ag, just one of the problems, I think, that Big Ag is that we're dealing with right now. It's, you know, the romaine recall, it basically, like, they told us, like, just not to buy it anymore.
Yeah, I remember.
Which goes back to, like, well, why are we setting up community gardens? Because I really still want a Caesar salad.
Sure.
And I don't want to be afraid to buy it at, you know, at a grocery store. One of the things that we cling to in the United States, I think, is food safety. It's their mantra. But what is safe about, poop getting into a water system that irrigates our vegetables? There's not much safe about that. And this is where we are now.
Yeah, I go up to Wolf Creek up in Madison and John Whiteside. And he's got quite a few head. He's got 600 or 700 head. But they all get the fresh pasture every single day. They rotational grazing.
And so if it says grass-fed, then why is it not grass-fed?
Yes.
Because there are loopholes in our labeling that allow us to do things like that. Like a very little known fact in the dairy industry. There are all sorts of classes of antibiotics. So, we all know that antibiotics shouldn't be in our food because it causes resistance. But there's a difference between an antibiotic that is administered versus an antibiotic that is fed.
Yes, and there are 12 antibiotics that are approved for animals.
Correct. And so, not everybody knows that. And like, not everybody wants to be, that's not their issue, and I get it. But the more, and yet, when there's a recall, or when, grandma's dying of some mysterious, infection that it's antibiotic resistant, this is why.
Yeah, it is. And folks, if you eat meat from the factory food system, you're going to get some antibiotics. And if you get into a situation that Gail just talked about, they don't know, and they'll give you the standard antibiotic, and you're resistant to it, and it's certainly possible that by the time they find the one that actually would have worked, it could be too late.
And so here is the dilemma, I think, is because not everybody can go to Wolf Creek and pay, $40 for a tenderloin.
Right.
Because, some people see this as an elitist thing. And I don't know what the answer is to that, quite frankly, because the way the system is right now, it's expensive to
it
get
is.
Food on a small...
It is.
It is.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. I invite your listeners to think about how we can make local food less expensive. I don't know the answer.
Actually, John told me his idea of the answer, but the entire community has to buy into it. And that's the thing. In other words, if you have people, it would be a sliding scale. People with means would pay N dollars, mm-hmm. and people that are not so fortunate mm-hmm. would pay what they would pay at a grocery store, and which is less than what the product is worth, but the people with means would end up supporting the ones that didn't have them. It would be a community effort.
Well,
and in that case, it would work.
I want to give a shout out to the local food hub, because their nonprofit part of this is really addressing this problem. They have a program called Pharmacy, Pharmacy, instead of Pharma, and where they buy our product, and they work with local doctors who, instead of prescribing, medicine, they prescribe good food, and they help. But it's a nonprofit. It takes the support of those who, it takes monetary support.
Absolutely.
And it's one of the things that drives me crazy about, this, what we're doing, is that, like, local food producers is, like, we can't make it. We need more support, on a state and local and federal level to do this. But our food is not, we don't get grants, we don't get public assistance, we don't get any help unless we're willing to go big.
Right, right. And that's the thing, folks, if, the community itself, you've got the, Albemarle County and Charlottesville City, the politicians on the planning board and the city council, if they could buy into this whole, the idea that it's community-based agriculture would in fact result in less copays, a healthier community, less diabetes, and, you know, better brains, which means better, you know, people learn and you know, in the education area. And now I know City Schoolyard Gardens is doing a great job.
We are so blessed because we do have a lot going on here and a lot of other places. You know, ironically, the food deserts are, you know, are not around here. I mean, you know, we live in a very, our food shed is very good, and, you know, there's, you know, where I'm from, northeastern North Carolina, not so much.
Right.
And you see a lot of obesity, you see a lot of, you know, heart disease, you see a lot of drug addiction, you see a lot of, you know, it's no coincidence. And, you know, working in your own little backyard is very important. The local food hub has done a great job. PB&J Fund.
Yeah, PB&J, yeah.
You know, Schoolyard Garden, can't say enough.
You know. And we're going to have to cut that a little short. However, if you are listening out in the Caremont Farm area, Gail will have a CD of that entire interview. We've been hearing on To Your Health and from other sources that the demand for organic food is growing, and eating organic food is healthier because chemical fertilizers, pesticides, and herbicides aren't used. But now we hear that the toxic administration in Washington might deregulate what is organic and what it's not. For a long time, the factory food system has destroyed our health by only serving the corporate community's bottom line and making the people it's supposed to feed and nourish sick. On this program, you've learned grass-fed, grass-finished beef is heart-smart and highly nutritious. Well, I just learned from Gail that beef raised on dirt with no grass can be fed pellets with organic grass-like substance in them, and the resultant beef can be labeled grass-fed, leaving you, dear listener, and me too, in a wasteland of confusion about what to believe. As the weeks roll by and the Twitter storms erupt daily, nobody knows what to expect from our federal government, and quite frankly, reading the news can lead to a stress overload, and we know stress can lead to early heart, digestive, and brain problems. Can't we all just get along? Well, the answer is yes, we can. Local community-based agriculture brings us together, nourishes us, and provides a common ground between folks from different cultures and backgrounds, strengthens and gives voice to people who, before now, had none, and most importantly, provides the truly healthy food we crave and need for our bodies. Now, just imagine if we could feed all or most of the local population with real food and not be dependent on outside political or corporate forces for our nutrition. Because the profit-only motivation of corporate food is keeping us sick and driving the true cost of food to an unsustainable level. Imagine life with 70% less copays or none at all for doctor's visits because of the newest trend of direct primary care and because we're healthier. Very few incidences of hours lost due to sick days. A life with more energy and increased production at work leading to less stress and promotions or pay raises. These rewards can be achieved by supporting programs like the local farmers market, eating at restaurants and food vendors who support local farmers, and supporting other programs within the Food Justice Network. Start your journey to a healthier and rewarding life. Thanks for listening. I want to thank Angelique and Charles Jenkins for using locally sourced ingredient in their restaurant soon to be relocated to the new dairy market, and Gail Hobbs Page of Caremont Farm for her insight and activism toward making our community a healthier place to live. Remember, supporting our local farmers by eating real food, wearing a smile, and keeping a positive attitude are keys to your health.